Next. Yeah, go ahead. I don't know. It's complicated by the fact that L. Ron Hubbard just died, because it included, it was against L. Ron Hubbard for all. See, SAMHSA was one aspect of this lawsuit. The complaint's 76 pages long. And, you know, there are literally thousands of things that have done to me that I have never even brought up. I mean, they happen on a regular basis. And the loads of those things are in that complaint. So I don't know. It's complicated by the fact that L. Ron Hubbard just died. We now have to file a Rule 25 motion to substitute as a state. We're going to try to move the case from Massachusetts to California for a lot of different reasons. So I'm not sure when it's going to come up. They actually, what I can prove for sure is they trespassed onto the premises and stole documents from the dumpster. What I can prove for sure is that the documents that have been produced of the 22,000, many of which come directly from my office file. And there are, now, do I have someone yet who broke in? No. I expect at some point that I will have that kind of a witness.
That,
well, see, here's the issue. And this is how we know. Picture, your secretary types out a letter. Okay? Your secretary types out a letter, and it's a clean copy. She sends a copy to Homer Shomer. She puts a copy in the file. All right? For it to end up, and let's suppose it's a clean copy, no correction, which would commonly go in the wastebasket, which might end up in the dumpster. Let's suppose it's a completely clean copy. So it's the final copy that went out. One goes in the file, one goes to the person. She would have to, the secretary, there are so many of these that are perfect, clean copies, would have to go, the girl would have to have the practice of throwing clean copies into the trash in order for them to get it. Now just think about that for a minute. Thousands of documents, clean copies. Why would a secretary go to a Xerox machine? Now, there may be occasions where she'd make an extra copy, unnecessary. She might have hit the three button and she only needed two. That could happen. But why repeatedly, over a year and a half, would she make a clean copy and repeatedly throw one away?
Was the original still in the file?
In many instances, they have copies of originals which are still in the file. In many instances, there are originals that went out to clients, such as letters and things of that nature. And there was one other aspect of this problem, which I don't remember, which I put together at the time when we proved to a court that by inference they had stolen them from the file. And it was one other, it had to do with dates on particular documents. That it, the documents that they turned over had date stamps at the top. And in terms of the document that we took out of our file, and when the document was used, it didn't make sense that it would ever have been thrown in the file, in the trash. But there are thousands of instances where these clean copies appear in the trash. And it simply doesn't make sense for a secretary in a letter to Homer Shomer to throw one copy away, put one in the file, and send one to you. Or send an original to you. Unless the secretary of the plant. Now, there was an operation, for example, and my sister Patty worked for me. We have an affidavit from a fellow. They interviewed some 60 people. 60 males to, my sister was single, to seduce my sister, get into her apartment, and get wax impressions of her keys. So, you know, there are all kinds of things. There were burglary tools found outside my door. There are numerous instances where my door was found unlocked when we got to work the following morning. Hundreds of instances where the burglar alarm went off. And see, for me to try to regurgitate all this to you, but just for an example, say in a three-month period in 1980, way back in the beginning, I might get phone calls 15 days in a row at 3 in the morning that my burglar alarm has just gone off. I live 30 minutes away to reset the alarm. Of course, you know, it'd be easy to set the alarm off. I'd have to go back to Boston at 3 in the morning and reset the burglar alarm. And once the burglar alarm, and so, of course, how many times are the police going to show up? The police showed up so many times in 1980, they just stopped coming. The security guard called the police so many times in 1980, they just stopped coming. Those things just repeatedly happened. Recently, they broke the I don't know who did it. I'll give you the circumstances. The window behind, there was a letter sitting on my desk which they would have wanted. It was a letter from Lowell Sullivan to someone at 60 Minutes. You can look in off my, we call it the porch or the deck outside my office window, and you could, if I didn't have the blinds down, you could have seen this letter on the thing. The window is, say, 4 feet by 10 feet. You're talking a huge piece of glass. There's guards there till 11 in the morning. This is a different, I've moved my office. This is a different office now from 1981. Guards till 11 o'clock at night, coming back at 6 in the morning. So it had to happen between that period of time. The next thing to the deck is the ocean. There's a gate 8 foot high over here. It's just, there's no drunk is going to wander down into this area. And I'll tell you why I say drunk. No drunk is going to wander down into this area, take a boulder, yay big, and throw it through this 4 by 10 window to get two of three bottles of scotch or whatever it was up on my credenza. Now, say 20 feet across the room between, say, 11 at night and 6 in the morning, it's dark. What Alky's even carried flashlights, would shine a light across the room to see the two bottles of booze on the credenza. The answer is none. But here's what we find. The window's caved in. This big boulder is there. There's the two bottles of booze missing. And it's at a critical time in this litigation. This is several months ago. There are a lot of reasons that I can't get into this. Critical. With information coming into my office. The pending grand jury in Boston. Pending criminal investigation out here. Several people who had contacted me whose names have never come out in the public. That the church would be very concerned about. If they were ever going to break, oh, and there was about, in my Xerox machine, there was about hundreds of pieces of paper. The girl before she, my secretary before she left, had filled the machine. When we came in that morning, there was only a little bit left. And we immediately changed the keys that day. So someone broke into the office, and not to steal booze. And I don't have no other enemies who would do it. There's all kinds of circumstantial evidence that took place in 80, 81 that they were getting access to all kinds of those things. I've forgotten where I was now. Okay. Other allegations. And I guess when I finish answering these, then I'm going to answer. But I'm trying to be as complete as possible because, you know, I want you to be able to ask all the questions you can. Other allegations. Nuclear physicist prior to Laurel's. Okay. All right. Now, yeah, I mean, look. In 1955, All About Radiation is written. It's all by a nuclear physicist and a medical doctor. The title is ambiguous in itself. It's signed, or there's the only name in it is L. Ron Hubbard. There's no medical doctor name. There's a, right after the preface in here, and I've read this, it says Medicus, whoever the hell Medicus is. But, you know, L. Ron Hubbard wrote this, copyrighted it, published it, disseminated it, got paid for it. He's fought for the protection of his copyright, fought for the protection of his trademark. In 1955, Laurel Sullivan would have been 12 years old. She didn't put by a nuclear physicist on the cover. So to say that Laurel Sullivan did it is responsible for the lie. You know, it's like everything else they've done. I don't even know how else to respond. I mean, I will say this. In the Armstrong case, there are numerous documents in L. Ron Hubbard's handwriting, which he's writing to various of his PR people as to how to characterize himself. He says, call me a nuclear physicist. If someone goes and reads the Armstrong transcript, you will read the following. Because I remember questioning Jerry Armstrong about this at some length. The various things that L. Ron Hubbard referred to himself as when it was convenient to refer to himself as being that thing. And among the things that he referred to himself as in his own handwriting is a nuclear physicist. So to perpetrate the claim that Laurel Sullivan is responsible for this, I mean, what else can you say? If after 6 weeks in listening to the testimony in the Armstrong case, you don't understand what the facts are and what, you know, a simple truth is, there's nothing else to be said. Why haven't you sued Freedom? I have. For libel, if what they say is false. I have. Should people with separate cases of harassment join those complaints of the suit? Yeah. Okay. Now, so I don't know. I haven't even completely read this thing. Why don't you just ask me questions? We'll go from there. Getting tired.
Yeah, please.
I was shown a document that the church had, which had a four-point program that you supposedly outlined in for your attack against the church, saying put out black PR about them and investigate. Yeah, out of the FAMCO thing. Is that something that you can respond to?
All right, well, I don't know. Black PR, absolutely not. I mean, I have never said put out black PR against the church, number one. Number two, have I diligently, industriously, with all of the power that I have, tried since the moment I learned, since the moment I first saw the Guardian's office docs in November 1979, tried to publish everything I know factually that the Church of Scientology has done by every means that I can accomplish, absolutely. If whatever you're referring to in their terminology is that it's black PR, then I'm guilty of it. If, as I claim, that it's the truth about this organization that will be adjudicated in these court cases, such as was adjudicated in Armstrong, then I am responsible for it, I take credit for it, I'm proud of it, and I believe I've helped a lot of people. Black PR, which to my mind, as I've read the policy, means to take some facts, correlate those with falsehood, as they do, and disseminate those correlations on the basis that they're facts, absolutely not.
Thank you.
This is a question regarding the International Special Board and other RTC missionaries or members who call up people in the field to disaffect us from you. Mm-hmm. In your considered opinion, what would be your response to those people? I prefer not to talk to them. I try to cut their comm very short. But I was curious as to what your thoughts on that were.
I would follow the policy of keeping the communication very brief, and I would say the following. I would say that there's a large body of people out there who have been involved in the Church of Scientology, of which I'm one, or you're one, who want answers, disclosures of critical issues. And those issues relate to where the money's gone, who's managing it, what purpose it has been used for, how much money has been paid to Eugene Ingram, how much money is being paid to the lawyers, who's running the church. And until there's been full and fair and open disclosure on some of those basics, you don't want to have anything to do with them.
Their response to that is, come on down to the board and we'll handle your grievances.
Yeah, well, then you just have to use your common sense, because you know how that works. I mean, they're just going to maneuver you. They're going to HC you from one position to another, and one place to another, and then you're not going to get the kinds of answers you really want with a full and independent mind that comes from not falling under their influence. So that's what I would say to them. I would say to them, for them to create a publication that answers, for example, how much money has been paid to their lawyers in the last 6 years? Who authorized it? For what purposes?
how much money have been paid to private investigators? For example, they paid Richard Bast. I know in the Cooper case they paid him, it was either $250,000 or $400,000 to try to set himself up and befriend Paulette Cooper. And that was church money after everything they'd done to her. So those kinds of answers should be, those kinds of questions should be asked, and you should be getting specific answers. And you should not cave in to their approaches until, as a matter of fact, the stronger you are to demand those answers, the great, much greater likelihood is you'll get them. If you don't, you'll never get them. If you follow their routine and let you maneuver you into a position where they do what they want to do for the sole reason of getting you back in and getting your money and getting you back online and getting your support, without getting those answers, you are in effect contributing to the organization which you already know to be corrupt.
Thank you. I have a question, sir.
Yes, sir.
I have been getting numerous letters, approximately one a month or every other month, from this attorney in Honolulu, Hawaii, Tolsman, I believe his name is, and as though I'm a member of the church and I owe him $845 and some odd cents as of right now, and he is defending the church in litigation against the IRS as to the taxable status of the church, if it's a tax-free entity or not. Apparently, they have now entered an appeals case because they must have lost the first case.
Right.
I never heard of this man until I received his communications. I never signed any agreement. You see, I don't think the left hand knows what the right hand is doing.
First of all,
I get 6.5 pounds of trash paper delivered to me by a messenger. And then, as a member of the church, I'm supposed to pay off this attorney, because I'm one of the people that owe over $10,000 in back taxes.
Yeah.
For being told that it was tax deductible.
Right. See, you are the perfect example. Let me withdraw that. I reiterate it as soon as I put this on the record, or on the tape. You've been notified by the IRS that you owe over $10,000 in back taxes, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
All right. You are the perfect example of what this class action should be about. Because there already are hundreds of individuals in your position, maybe thousands, and by that I mean people who've already been notified.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands and thousands of people who haven't been notified who are in the identical position, everyone in this room who have paid the Church of Scientology any money and taken a tax deduction are in your position.
That's right.
It's just for some reason, bad luck or whatever, they've got you on their list, the IRS, as to one of the tax returns that they're auditing and that they're going to seek the money from. There are many people like you who have called my office who are in your position, and who this lawyer is, I don't know. The status of the litigation, I can tell you. The church lost for numerous reasons, among which were that they violated the operational test of the Internal Revenue Code. And one of those, there were numerous violations, funding illegal operations by the Guardian's office, enormous to L. Ron Hubbard, policies and practices of the Guardian's office that not characteristic of a tax-exempt nonprofit, eleemosynary, you know, trying to do good to others institutions. I mean, when you're trying to break into office buildings and frame people, you're not helping them. So it's not charitable. And for all those reasons, and many others, the church lost its tax status. It is on appeal. The evidence is just overwhelming. The likelihood of success, church prevailing, is I give it less than 1%, and which means that every person who's ever donated any money now is going to owe money to the IRS.
Ever? Isn't it a statute of limitations?
Well, No, but not for purposes, for example, in the tax year is 1970, there are statute of limitations governing the IRS, but it's from the moment the fraud was uncovered, or if they made what they call jeopardy assessment, it tolls the statute. For the tax years 1970 and 1973, which have been litigated, in which they've lost, everyone for those years, once the decision is made, the statute of limitations begins at that point, because it's just been adjudicated that they're not tax exempt, therefore the deductions are improper. So that's when the statute will begin.
Not years before that.
But not years before that, and correct, because to my knowledge, they're not litigating any years before that. So prior to 19, right now it's 70, 71, 72, but for 73, 74, 75, they've made jeopardy assessments already, and that's their next step. And now they're getting into the heavy stuff. 73, they get into RRF. And I mean, they've got internal tape recordings of church management conspiring to conceal payments to Hubbard. I mean, they've got 10 times the evidence that they had in the prior tax years. And the RRF was the beginning of all these millions and millions of dollars of payments. So the IRS case is going to be even stronger, which means that all the people, to my mind, who were originally victimized by paying the money based on all kinds of representations, all the little guys are going to get victimized again. Because now they're going to lose their tax debt. They're going to lose their tax deduction, and they're going to have to pay taxes on it. So you have a lawsuit. As I said in my speech a couple weeks ago, you have a lawsuit, and everyone has a lawsuit against the church for violating the operational test of the Internal Revenue Code and causing you to lose your tax deduction based on the representation that they were a law-abiding, tax-exempt, charitable, non-profit religious organization.
That's right.
And see, which kind of goes, and to further answer your question, it kind of helps me explain a little bit about the basis of my lawsuit, the lawsuits I'm involved in. Church has black PR'd me saying I'm against religion, attacking religion, blah, blah, blah. For the umpteenth time, which I've been repeating in courtrooms all over the United States, and it is the reason I have never lost, and never means never, not one motion for summary judgment or a motion to dismiss in any of my lawsuits for fraud, intentional infliction of emotional distress, or any of my major lawsuits against the Church of Scientology. Not one lawsuit has been lost. The probate case, I've explained on many occasions what the probate case was about. Between 1980 and 1982, L. Ron Hubbard took the position in courtrooms all over the United States, or the church took the position on his behalf, as did his wife, that he was a missing person. Their lawyers filed affidavits, and they answered deposition questions and interrogatory answers, and a variety of other, what they call, discovery and pleadings in the law, that no one knew how to communicate with L. Ron Hubbard. No one had communicated with him since March 1979 in the Church of Scientology. That the attorneys had never communicated with him. So he was asserting as a defense in all of these cases that he was a missing person through the church. So we picked up on that. And we simply said, well, if he wants to be a missing person, then we will file a lawsuit to have a receiver appointed to take, so that we can serve the receiver, who will collect his assets, act in his stead, which is what those statutes in every state around the United States provide for when you're dealing with a missing person. The press picked up on it. The thing went, like a wildfire, and the next thing you know, it was appearing in the news that, we claimed he was dead. But if someone ever goes back and reads the pleadings we filed, you will see exactly what was pled. That he said he was missing, that he had been defaulted in the Paulette Cooper case, a multi-million-dollar case, for not appearing. He had filed these affidavits, or these attorneys in the church had filed these affidavits saying he was missing, and a variety of other reasons that are set forth in there. I can't even remember them all, but all of which are suggestive of the fact that he was missing. Case went through. a variety of procedures, and the judge was going to rule in our favor based on all these things that we filed that he was missing until at the 11th hour, the Friday before the judge is going to rule on a Monday, and the Friday before that, L. Ron Hubbard filed a declaration saying, I'm not missing. The judge then ruled that L. Ron Hubbard was not a missing person, and in the declaration he said some very interesting things that I found real interesting, saying that it made me believe that Miscavige appeared at the time, saying that David Miscavige is my trusted friend. And it was a little bit atypical of L. Ron Hubbard to say some of the things that I thought he said in there. So they filed a declaration. The declaration said, I'm not missing. The judge said, he says he's not missing. I'm going to rule he's not missing. I said, fine. I didn't appeal it because it was what I wanted. I wanted either that or receiver. I then took the judge's order, took it all around the country to each case, filed it in court, and said, see, he's not missing. Now we can serve him by substituted service. Because under the law, if he's not missing, it means that he's concealing himself. I mean, he can use the word seclusion. But under the law, if there's people trying to sue you and fine you and you're running, it means you're concealing yourself. And we then got all kinds of court orders, which are in every major case around the country, that he has to be served by substituted service because he was not a missing person. He was a person who was concealing himself. And that's what we accomplished. So the church says that, you know, they present this posture that apparently we're losing these things left and right or whatever. I can't even keep up with them. But I will tell you this, we have never lost a case. We have won every major motion in every case in the country. In a case that they hyped up that they would win, the Armstrong case, they told everyone, they put out in the media, they had a lot of legal grounds to win the case because they tried to try the case on a very narrow basis. Who had the right to possess these documents that Jerry Armstrong had previously had possession of before they were filed in court, and they lost. And anyone who's ever read the decision knows how badly they lost. And the reason they lost is real simple. Because justice and the equities of all this litigation are on the side of you people. They're not on the side of this organization that's done what it's done. They're on the side of the people who've been ripped off. They're on the side of the former Scientologists like Jerry Armstrong and the Laurel Sullivans, etc. They're on your side. And this tax thing, you have a clear-cut winning case. If you band together, and there's a widespread assessment for everyone who's taken a tax deduction, you can get your money back from the church or make the church pay it. Otherwise, you're going to stand alone. The IRS is going to come after you. You're going to legally owe it. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, I realize that.
And you're going to be fighting with limited funds against the Internal Revenue Service for something you were victimized about by the Church of Scientology. It's a double ripoff. Yes.